This is the Paper Planes podcast, where we take a deep dive into some of the week's most notable business and marketing stories and interview high-performing business leaders and marketing professionals to find out their lessons for success.
It's telling the story of the brand, and it's like, okay, so now you know who we are. Here's why you should like us. Here's why you now need to trust us. Now you can buy from us. If you're trying to sell your product, then there's a problem with your process. The only reason they're not going to buy from you is because you're going to fuck it up.
Welcome to the Paper Planes podcast, episode number 61. Thank you very much for tuning in. If this is your first time with us, then welcome. And we're glad to have you here. If you have been here before, then welcome back. And we're glad that you came back. So we are going to talk to a gentleman by the name of Justin Tamset today. He is also known as JT. He is a fitness business coach and speaker. Obviously, for those who know me, those who listened to me in the past, I have a fairly challenging opinion on business coaches because a lot of them haven't actually achieved anything. Justin is very, very different. Justin has achieved a lot of things in his past before he became a business coach, which is why he is so interesting and to listen to. He has done in his time 331 presentations in 19 countries to almost 200,000 people. He's spoken in front of the Australian Rugby Union, Coca-Cola, and all sorts of other people. He's got his own Facebook live show, and he also has his own podcast, and he has been coaching businesses in the art of success for the last 15 years. Now, he predominantly operates in the fitness industry, but he has kind of expanded beyond that. So he's been, you know, working with all sorts of companies, but started out in personal training businesses, gyms, club owners, club businesses, those kind of things. He's won lots of different awards. He's got let's not go into it anymore. You're going to find out in a minute that he is a very, very interesting guy to speak to, so much so that this one, our interview, goes on for almost an hour. But honestly, worth listening to every little bit. Before we jump into that, the usual housekeeping, please rate and review us on iTunes. That would be very much appreciated. If you're interested in seeing what we do in our business, you can find us on Instagram, which is flypaperplanes.co. Our website is www.flypaperplanes.co as well. And come and find me on Instagram, Simon Dell, or Twitter, Simon Dell. Can't really miss me, but if you do connect with me, please let me know where you are, what you listen to, who you are, all those kind of bits, because it's really great knowing that people are actually listening out there. So thank you very much. That's pretty much it. Other than Gilberto, thepodcastboss.com. Don't miss out. If you want to do your own podcast, he is a fantastic resource to either start out or help you with your podcast every week. That's pretty much it. So let us jump into the interview with Justin JT Tamset. So welcome to the show, Justin Tamset. How are you?
Mate, I am terrific, Simon. Thanks for having me on board.
But we actually call you JT instead of Justin, don't we?
Well, everybody except my mum does, yes.
Right. Now, we've had this conversation with other people on this podcast in the past. Was JT a nickname that you created, or was that just a kind of something someone else created?
It was my rugby coach in 1993.
Right.
Started calling me JT, and I'd already lived many years of my life and never been called that. And then all of a sudden it came and it stuck, and then really has become, and I know, you know, we're going to talk about marketing and branding. It's really become my brand since 1993.
There always seems to be a JT in a rugby team. I don't know what that is. Do you know what? I think it's maybe a Welsh thing as well as it's a, you know, as a Kiwi thing. There's always seems to be a JT somewhere. I've played with JTs before.
Well, you know, we could say there's lots of John Thomases running around.
Jonathan. Yeah. I guess that may be where it's.
I rang a radio station, not thinking on talkback, and I said, "Yep, it's JT here, and I'm calling from Beecroft." And I went, "Are you the JT?" And I went, Well, yes, I am, but not the one that you're probably thinking of.
give us your 60-second pitch, who you are, what you do, all those kind of things.
Well, I am the Beecroft Under-11s netball coach.
Well, right, that's it. Let's just stop there and talk about that for 45 minutes.
look, my history is 30 years in the fitness industry, from being a gym owner to now a consultant in the industry. But I also work with lots of businesses outside the industry, real estate businesses, physio practices, and other allied health professionals around their marketing and their positioning. I have a real passion around getting the right people working for us. So I like thinking about the culture that our organizations have, yeah, the core values. And I do a lot of work just one-on-one with clients about getting their shit together in business, because in small business, it's hard to do that. And that's kind of what my job is to come in and say, all right, let's start to put this jigsaw puzzle together.
Yeah.
Let's see what the picture looks like. And then let's go to Simon, who can help us with SEO. Let's go over here and that person can help us with our HR. Yeah. And let's go over here and they can help us with our finance. I don't do the in the trenches stuff. My job is to try to help get a clearer picture for business owners, managers, and leaders of teams.
You're the conductor.
I like that. I might use that. Well, yeah, what are they?
Come on. In 30 years, you must have used that before.
No, what I've used is on the hub. Like people come to me and they go, oh, well, you're going to know someone. I'm like, yeah, I probably do know someone. And, I know someone who knows someone.
Yeah.
But
it's that kind of approach, isn't it? You know, most people try and are building a business and, you know, they need a symphony of people. They need everybody, you know, playing different sorts of instruments. And when they start a business, they always think, well, you know what? I can, you know, I do a bit of violin. I can play the French horn as well. I can, you know, bang a drum. I can do it all. But, you know, as the business gets bigger and bigger, they suddenly realize that there's no substitute for people with those specialist skills.
100%. I mean, we all don't have the ability that Prince had of being able to play multiple instruments.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just a freak, and there are business owners that are just freaks that can do everything. But, you know, and the interesting thing is the world that we now live in, businesses are outsourcing so much. But even if we outsource our marketing or our SEO or whatever it may be, we still need to have the key performance indicators that outsourcing department needs to hit in order for us to justify the cost or whatever. And I think in business, we've always been kind of scared of that outsourcing, but the world that we now live in, it's becoming more available and a lot more easier for people to do and manage that outsourcing.
I'm going to digress completely on your Prince comment there. I never forget there was a interview that Eric Clapton did once, and one guy said to him, how does it feel to be that? This was before Prince died. He goes, how does it feel to be the greatest living guitarist in the world? And Eric Clapton said, I don't know, ask Prince.
How good's that?
Which is a brilliant, brilliant, you know, from someone like Eric Clapton to be so humble and say, you know, it's definitely not me. Talk to me about your rugby career. So you started playing rugby where and for who?
Well, I started playing rugby in Australia at Eastwood, and then from Eastwood – well, actually, I played in Newcastle, which is just north of Sydney.
Yeah.
I played up there.
Are you Newcastle born and bred?
Oh, I'd love to say I am, because I think I'm one of the few Newcastle Knights supporters left on the planet. but, no, I was born in Sydney and then moved to Newcastle for uni.
Right.
And played rugby up there, came back, played rugby here, and then – coached and ended up coaching first grade in Sydney, Shoot Shield competition, and now I'm on the board of directors for Northern Suburbs Rugby Club. So we're basically feed players into the Shoot Shield competition, and we compete with every other club in Sydney for players, sponsors, and members.
What is it? I grew up playing rugby. I play since I was 11 years old and kind of retired in my late 20s. What's it about rugby to you that makes it so different from all the other games that you could have, with balls that you could have picked up?
Yeah, I've always wondered why rugby sort of stood out. I mean, I was a typical Aussie kid that played rugby and played cricket. And I just love team sports. You know, at the end of the day, there's nothing better than walking off the pitch with a victory and looking at your mates that you've done it with. And I think something about rugby is, you know, you might be bleeding, you might be sore, you might be busted, but there's always a bloke next to you who's just as sore, just as busted, who pats you on the back and says, you know what, you did your best, or we won today, that's great, and you can celebrate together as much as you like. But it's still that feeling when you come off the pitch in a team that I think I love the most. I couldn't play tennis. I don't think I'm bloody smart enough to, or emotionally strong enough to play tennis. But I couldn't do those individual sports. I very much like being part of a team.
Do you know what it was for me? Because when I finished playing rugby union, I went and played football, soccer, whatever you want to call it. Football's the right name, but anyway. So I kind of saw both sides of it, and they're very, very different team games, and there's very, very different approach. But I always thought that rugby union, whilst it had a high skill bar, you know, you had to be, it took a lot for you to be really good. I always felt rugby union was kind of a low entry point. If you tried hard enough, you know, you were a welcome member of the team. Whereas I kind of, with football, it's like you can try as hard as you like, but if you can't kick the thing in a straight line, nobody wants you on the side.
You're the guy that has to carry the oranges.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I always felt rugby union was a more welcoming game. It was like, you know, do you want to get covered in mud? Do you want to get punched in the face? Do you want to get stamped on the head? We don't care whether you can pick up a ball, drop it, or whatever. Just, you know, come on, you're welcome onto this park. You know, that was as long as
I agree with that. It's you know, I think one of the interesting things about sport in general, particularly in Australia, is we now have the aspirational sport and we have the inspirational sport, and I'd got to the point in my rugby career where I was just inspiration. I just wanted to play for the fun of it. The idea of aspiring to greats kind of went out, because I was in the period where we're flipping from amateur to professional, and I loved my job too much, so I wasn't going to quit what I was doing to play rugby, because I knew I wasn't that good. And I just love the camaraderie of it, and the fact rugby is one of those true international sports. We've got players from our club that are all over the world playing rugby, and I just think what a great opportunity for kids these days.
It seems to – we'll move on in a second, but it seems to eliminate egos to a degree, certainly the lower level, because, you know, when you're covered in mud and someone's stamping on your head, it doesn't matter who you are. You know, you're kind of ego or whatever. You're one of the rest of the team. Whereas I think football still has that kind of elitist, people walk into it thinking how good they are and so on and so forth. But
I mean, in a football perspective, we look at it, you know, you got your striker and he's the rock star. But in rugby, well, the number 10 probably thinks he's the rock star or the winger. Everybody plays as a team. And there's so many analogies, I think, that we can pull from sport into business. And particularly in Australia, because sport is so mainstream, it's a great way to explain how to run a business by flipping it back to a sporting analogy, because people go, oh, yeah, I get that on the soccer pitch, or I see that on a basketball court. Oh, I know what you mean now from a business. Oh, I get it.
So you went – so your sort of early career from a working perspective, you've obviously done the time within clubs and fitness clubs and things like that. I think it's something like 20-odd years in active health club or something like that.
So I had my gyms for 15 years.
15 years, right.
And then I've been a consultant for 15. Right. So 30 years in the fitness industry.
Those 15 years running clubs.
Yep.
I guess my first question is how did you get into it? Because obviously you got into it in a time before that kind of big brand fitness club was out and about. So how did that happen that you sort of found your way into that?
Yeah, so I guess, I mean, my great grandfather, my great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my mother are all, or were all, and are all business owners. So I think I was kind of destined to run my own business based on my genes. And I tried being a personal trainer. I really tried hard to be a personal trainer, Simon. But I just couldn't put up with the shit that clients would give me. So I decided, well, look, if I can't put up with the shit that one client would give me, why don't I open a gym and have 1,200 of them give me shit?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Perfect sense. Yeah. So we opened the first gym, and it was just a matter of, we were probably 4 years ahead of Healthlands coming to Australia, which then obviously became Fitness First. So we're a few years ahead of the chains coming in, and it was such a beautiful time because the member expectation was almost like a small country town for a gym, and people came in and you'd go to conferences and people would talk about, all right, you've got to have the cheers approach. Everybody has to know your name, and that was customer service. And that was pretty cool time to run a fitness business because you didn't have to be, like me, particularly intelligent. You could almost open the door. People had come. You'd get enough. You'd make enough. You wouldn't make a fortune. But there wasn't excessive competition, so you didn't need to have a highly refined product or facility for that matter. I mean, we were in a warehouse and we had crap falling from the tin roof every single day before we'd open up, we'd be vacuuming. Mm. So that's how I ended up there. It's just something I always wanted to do. I set myself a goal of having a gym open before I was 25 and missed by a couple of months. But, you know, I look back on those times and just loved that the community feel that we had. Yeah.
What made you then do the switch? Because obviously was it something that was coming over a long time, or was there one day that was a particular trigger where you went, you know what, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be in the business anymore, and I think I'd be better off coaching people.
Yeah, there were two triggers. The first trigger was we got the business to a point where it really couldn't grow any further because we had no more car parking.
Right.
And members would be coming in every day complaining about car parking. And I'm like, oh, I can't cope with this anymore because it's something I can't deal with. We can't put our price up. So we want to make more money. We want to be more successful. We've either got to relocate, which I'm not sure I want to have that expense. So that was on one side of the coin. And then on the other side of the coin, I suffered a stress-induced illness, and so it was a health issue where I just went, you know what, I don't need this stress in my life anymore. You know, we had 60, 70 staff working for us and a couple of thousand members, and it just created a lot of angst for me. And so I just decided, you know what, I'm going to be a business coach because I think I've done my time as an owner to be able to now work and help business owners run their business better. And for the first few years, I definitely helped business owners around the operational side of things. And then as I was more removed from the industry, I started to work and understand more about strategy and started to work more on the strategic side of business rather than just the basic operations of how to operationally run your gym better.
I've spoken about gyms with a couple of people on this because we've had a couple of people that have had backgrounds in gyms. And one of the things I always say is that they seem to me to be a really hard thing to do. That's a complete generalization because that's me looking at it from an objective point of view. But you've obviously met business owners in different channels. Are gyms that one of the harder businesses to run, or is there are they all just as hard, or you know, what's your sort of opinion there?
I think any business where you're selling a service is challenging, but when that service is optional, it's even more challenging. So, you know, whether that's hospitality, whether that's fitness, whether that's a massage therapist, where someone's choosing to spend their money on a service, that makes it really hard.
Okay.
And I guess from the evolution of the fitness industry is really now gyms are a commodity. You kind of pay now in a lot of different gyms around the world. You just pay to rent the equipment 3 days a week. You know, there's no service. I mean, there are brands in Australia, there are brands in the world that 100%, despite what everybody says, they match what the consumer's expectation is totally, because they promise no service and they deliver no service. So you've got a happy consumer. The consumer's going, well, you weren't going to be there at the front desk to say, "Hey, Justin," and you weren't going to be on the gym floor, and I didn't have that expectation, and you're meeting it.
And I think most people would understand. There's, you know, obviously two major ones that I can think of straight away that would fit into that service, where they're 24 hour. There's nobody there. You can just come and go as you want. And I guess that kind of model retention is very, very hard.
There's no stickiness. You've got no stickiness.
Exactly.
And I think this becomes the other issue in a service industry is the people. Because if I can go to gym A or gym B, and they're both as convenient and they're both priced exactly the same, then I'm going to go where I feel more comfortable with the people there. If I'm going to go to restaurant A or restaurant B, I'm going to go, you know, where the waitress is better looking, or services me better, or whatever it may be. You know, as soon as we get into service, we then have got to look at people. And I kind of feel as in that service space, we've almost, well, I'm sure lots of your guests and lots of your blogs have been around the inability of people to communicate and connect with this new generation that's coming through the workforce, and that is a true differentiating factor.
One of the, obviously, the fitness brands that comes to the front of my mind that's obviously positioned themselves something different and is, you know, has achieved and is still achieving massive growth is the F45 brand. I guess that kind of turned it on its head, because I guess that is all about service, really.
Well, it is and it isn't it. You know, it's fascinating. You look at that model, because they have had incredible growth. And I think particularly one of the reasons why they've had incredible growth has been their social media marketing, and they've got their message out. They also have a very cool brand. It's very preppy. It is an amazing juggernaut that's taken off. But because of that growth, and because they've understood that the quality of coach is difficult to replicate across multiple models, they've put majority of their coaching is now on TVs. So as the punter, you can go in there, you look at the TV and you follow the exercises on the TV, the buzzer goes, you move, and so on and so on. And so they've got rid of the really hard bit of duplicating the model by putting it on TV, which is really clever. And then if they've got someone who is good, they're walking around the floor and creating the atmosphere and the ambience.
Yeah. I've actually met a yoga company doing the same thing, or taking the same approach a couple of weeks back, and they decided that all of the yoga instruction was going to be on video on TV, and then the club owner or the club manager or whatever it was would be there to kind of, you know, offer individual support and help, but it removed that ambiguity between, you know, different levels of education, different levels of teaching within the club. So
I think, you know, again, come back to this whole service model, and we talk a lot about this obviously in our industry, but it's the whole experience from, you know, when people from their car park all the way through to the front desk, in through the workout, on the way out, back to their car, that complete experience will determine whether you have a successful business or not.
We've been working with another company, that FMCG company, that we started work with in the last couple of weeks, and we were doing some profiling of their customer base. And we were looking at the sort of 25 to 32 year old female market. And one of their members of staff, one of the managers, sits squarely slap bang in the middle of that marketplace. And they highlighted that for them, that experience is the key thing for them to want to continue spending money. But interestingly, they also pointed out that it was an experience that they didn't want any surprises. They wanted a high level of experience, but they also didn't want anybody to be surprising them. So it was almost an expected experience was the word.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Whereas when we profiled another kind of older demographic, they were perhaps looking for something that was a bit more unexpected. But yeah, so it's that expected experience, I think, was the key thing that we got from that female demographic, which I guess is what F45 delivers. That's
correct, 100%.
And that's why, I think that's why they're obviously so successful. And Mark Wahlberg is chucking money into them as well at the moment. So.
Yeah, I did see that as a press release recently.
God, he gets up at 3 a.m. I hope he's not expecting everyone else to start doing
that. Oh, look, I've got a client who's got an F45 and she's in northwestern Australia, and their most popular time slot for their class is 4:30 a.m. I'm like, who the hell exercises at 4:30 a.m.?
Pardon my French, but fuck that. That's...
the only thing you should be doing when there's a 4 in the number and that's sleeping.
Yeah. Absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about sales and marketing, because obviously we're supposed to be talking about marketing here, because that's the entire point of this podcast. And one of the things I want to understand is how important you think sales, because obviously sales and marketing get bundled in together, they often get bundled in together, but I just want to treat them separately for the minute. But sales to me is a vital part of a business owner or startup or anybody's skill set. Number one, do you agree with that? Number two, how do you teach people who can't sell to sell?
So the first thing I believe around sales is that if you're trying to sell your product, then there's a problem with your process.
Right. Okay.
My expectation is that the consumer buys your product. So they've done their research through your marketing, zero moment of truth marketing.
Yeah.
And they've come in and they're like, they're hot. They want to buy. And if they've rung you or if they've walked into your store or walked into your gym, they've done their research. The only reason they're not going to buy from you is because you're going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
You're going to talk too much, or you're not going to listen to what they want, or you're going to show them something that they don't need, or they're coming in with it's a lady who's coming in to buy a car with their husband, and you as the salesperson talk directly to the husband and forget the wife, and she walks out and goes, well, I'm not buying off that dickhead. And I get really passionate about this because I really believe that as salespeople, if we connect with the prospect when they come in, that's the first step of having them buy from us. We don't need to always be focusing on selling.
Yep.
So connection is the first step, and then listening to what they want and showing them the solution is the second step. And if you've done that well, there's no selling. They just buy from you. And so I spend a lot of time with people in that sales area of just trying to get them to understand and role play, even though they hate that, and just asking questions and listening.
Yeah.
And it really is a life skill. So it's almost how I pre-frame any training. I just say, I'm not going to teach you to sell. I'm going to teach you to be a better human being.
Yeah. I mean, I've always said that certainly with startups, one of the skills that they ought to have is the ability to sell. But I guess really it's the ability to communicate your brand beliefs, what you're actually offering. I think that's probably the, I think if we remove the word sell and put the word communicate in there, I think that's probably closer to, I think, what you're suggesting there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, sales is like a dirty word for so many people. And people go, oh, I don't want to sell, I don't want to sell. And I'm like, I'm not asking you to sell. I'm asking you to solve the problem of the person in front of you and then have them buy the product.
And if they can't solve that problem, what you're saying is there's a problem with the product or there's a problem with the brand.
Exactly.
Okay.
What I'm saying is if I can't solve your problem with my widget, then that either means that the marketing that I've done to get you in front of me doesn't match my widget, or I genuinely, the widget is not the right thing for the person. Well, then send them somewhere else, and then they come back and they go, wow, that person didn't try and sell me a widget that wasn't going to help me fix my problem. Mm. They've sent me to the right. So they leave on a good note rather than being sold the wrong thing that they don't use.
On that note then, when you walk into these businesses, and whether it's a fitness or whether it's one of the other channels that you work with, what are some of the common things that you see people, business owners that they're just, you know, doing wrong, that people potentially listening to this could go, right, well, here's two or three things that I should look at tomorrow and start making some change?
So the number one thing that I see in the majority of small businesses is from their advertising or their marketing approach, they go from the consumer knowing who they are, they then just ask them to buy straight away.
Right.
And for me, there's two steps in between. And this, so they go from knowing the product or knowing the brand, they then have to like the brand, they then have to trust the brand, then they buy from the brand. And Gary Vaynerchuk talks about it as jab, 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 right hook. Yeah. I talk about it as know, like, trust, buy. And what happens is in the majority of businesses is we're skipping that like and most importantly that trust bit and we're going straight to having the customer buy from us. And as a result, they're not buying, so therefore we have to sell from them. We have to sell to them, and when we sell to them, we don't get buybacks, we don't get retention, and we don't get good word of mouth advertising to generate more leads because we've sold them something that they may or may not be happy with.
Right.
So we go back, and so for me, it's just telling the story of the brand, and it's like, okay, so now you know who we are. Here's why you should like us.
Yeah.
Here's why you now need to trust us. Now you can buy from us. And taking a customer through that journey. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then I guess the challenge becomes for most business owners, the story of the brand, because they struggle to go, they struggle to come up with a narrative that they think is appealing to people, especially, for example, you know, sometimes when you meet accountants. And I always pick on accountants on this podcast, but it's just that you very rarely meet exciting accountants with a great story behind them.
There probably is a story. It's just that they don't understand what a story is.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't understand why it's important to people.
No. No, because they're number crunchers.
Yeah. Yeah, but
they're not marketers.
I guess then, so my question is, and you spoke about Gary Vaynerchuk there as well, you know, and you either love or hate Gary Vaynerchuk. I know which side I fall on. I don't hate him. I'm not going to start off on that one because he's ridiculously rich and I'm not, so I can't really. no warrant for any criticism for him whatsoever.
But see, he's a good one where people didn't know who he was, and then people started to know him, and then there was a whole bunch of people that liked him, and then then they moved from liking him to trusting him, and then they started to buy what he started to what he needed to say, and he's a good example of that story that's progressed through, and many consumers, they've got to the point where they, well, look, no, I don't like Gary. Okay, well, then I'm not going to trust him, I'm not going to buy from him.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay, but there's plenty of people that do.
Yeah, I like him. I know of him. I trust him. Yeah, anyway, let's not. I'm going to go off on a tangent here. You're setting me up, JT. Let's go back to the accountant. The question was, how do these people create a narrative? because I think that to me is the crux of the matter with a lot of these, is that they go, why am I different? Why am I, you know, where's my story? I'm an accountant. I've been an accountant for 20 years. How do I differ myself from other accountants?
The number one differentiating factor for every single business is why you originally got into the business. Why did you choose this? And Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, should be a must read for any entrepreneur. And if you can't read, then just watch his TED Talk. It goes for 18 minutes and I watch it every year just to make sure that I'm still back on track with why I do what I do.
Yeah.
And when you understand why you do what you do and what gets you out of bed in the morning to go off and do stuff, geez, that makes it a lot easier to get up and do stuff. And what he talks about in that book, which is a really interesting point, is that when you're clear and you start to talk to people about that, what happens then is it becomes a beacon, it becomes a magnet, and you attract other people with similar whys. So for the accountant, when the accountant's super clear on why they decided to do what they do, and then they can articulate that, that will attract other customers that are similar to, who have a similar why. Mm. It's just that often in business we go, oh, I'm doing this because I always have done it. Well, yeah. There's a reason why you've always done it. Let's analyze what that is.
Yeah. I met a guy the other day who, financial planner, and you know, and he's earning a lot of money, six figures, and one of those figures at the front has a three in front of it.
Nice.
But you talk to him about financial planning and he's like, meh, he's like, you know, he was going, shrugging his shoulders, he's not particularly interested in it. He does it because it makes him money, lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You talk to the guy about fishing, completely different story.
Interesting.
You know, you can see the passion and the desire, you know, that, and he turned and said, I'd go fishing 365 days of the year if I could, you know, that's where I want to be. That sort of passion, I guess my question is, you're an accountant for 20 years and you say to people, why do you do it? And they don't have that fishing passion inside them. Is it because they're doing the wrong thing or just because they've never really sat down and thought about it and they should be or they should be doing something else?
I think it's a bit of both. I do believe that they've probably never thought about it. I think there's a lot of people who are probably 40 to 45 years plus who are doing jobs because their parents told them to. And they've been in that same job for 25 years and they look back and they go, I wonder why I chose this as a career.
Yeah.
And they don't actually know why. And so deep down, they may in fact not be happy, but at that age, they're too scared to change.
And they got two kids in school and
private school.
Yeah, blah, blah, and that kind of thing. You know,
it makes perfect sense. But from that makes it really difficult. But I think you then got to go back and say, all right, well, we can still have a story. And our story can often will then focus on the clients that they've helped. And you talked about it with the FMCG client that you've got, where they're very clear on one of their customers. And again, I think at the top end of town, the accountants are very clear on who their customer is. But the accountant that's in a suburb goes, well, I'll be the accountant to everybody. Well, really?
Yeah.
If you had I can't tell you how many people come to me and say, do you know an accountant who can really help me in the fitness industry to help minimize my tax and what I can do? And I'm like, no, there isn't one. And they're like, seriously? there's one lawyer in the whole of Australia who focuses on the fitness industry.
Right.
He cleans up.
I was going to say, I bet he does. I bet he, you know.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's out of Melbourne. He's doing so well. He's about to open a practice in Sydney.
Yeah.
So, I think when you there's an advantage to niching down, and we talk about that a lot in business, but I think if we can niche, that becomes your story and that's how people can and they can trust you because you are the expert in that particular area, that particular field.
What do you think is a better option, niching from a particular vertical like that, so fitness, or niching with a particular product? Do you think there's any difference between the two?
I don't think there is, but I do think I think niching is an extremely powerful marketing tool. Because I believe when you niche, you can then use authority marketing where you can go out and say, look, I am the expert in this area because of these reasons.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a blog on your site about the muscle foods, and you read that and you go, right, this bloke knows how to do SEO. He is the authority in this space. So all of a sudden now reading that, I've moved from knowing you, I've gone to your website, I kind of like what you're doing, and I read that blog, I now trust that you can deliver. You must be able to help me because I also have a e-commerce product, or I also have a restaurant that's similar, or I also have a sporting goods business or a real estate business.
Do you know what? It's actually funny, and I'll put us on the psychiatric chair for you to examine for 5 minutes, because when you look at our website, we get a lot of traffic. I mean, we you know, smash the SEO rankings. We're top 10 for about 20 really key search terms, you know, marketing consultant, digital consultants, all those kind of things. But we don't convert as much as I think we should. You know, we get a lot of people going to the website, but we don't necessarily get people actually then contacting us. And we know what search terms they're looking for because we track all these kind of things. And if I was, you know, if I was saying to you, what do you think the problem is there? Do you think that's because we're not presenting our skill set properly, or we're not presenting how we can help people properly, or the trust elements aren't there? And I know that's putting you right on the spot there, but, you know, what would you sort of see as a problem there?
So the first thing that I see is that there's, on your website, there's very few calls to action.
Yeah.
So the call to action is on your website is purely about building a database.
Yeah.
Which is what we've always talked about in marketing, is let's build the database, let's put them into the funnel, move them through the funnel, and eventually, which I love, by the way, eventually we get them as a customer.
Yeah.
And again, I think as businesses, we need to be more open to that word eventually. And more often than not, a business gives up on the customer. The customer doesn't give up on the business.
Yeah.
So we got to be consistent in that delivery. So I think your website is very much, as most are, is about building that database.
Mm.
But for me, there's three types of customer. And it's based on the decisions to make changes in our lives. And for me, when I read a lot of your site, it's about collecting information. So it's the person that is in, I'm going to call it contemplation phase, where they're thinking, should be doing something about my marketing. But there's nothing on your website if I'm in the action phase, which is, I want to do something about my marketing. Where do I go?
Yeah.
Oh, I've got to contact you. So, you know, potentially on all our websites, we need to cater for the person that's thinking, saying, I should do something. Then there's the gunner, I will do something. And then there's the person that is ready to do something, which is click here, press this bloody button, and we'll get the angels into your practice or into your business within 48 hours.
And it's funny you should say that, because we're actually in the process of rebranding and rebuilding a new website. And we took a lot of, we've taken a few cues from certainly online software companies, because online software companies have generally got one chance to convert you.
Yeah.
If you're on a website and, you know, and that you're thinking about signing up for a $99 piece of software once a month, that kind of thing, they don't have many opportunities to muck around with building trust. They need to kind of get you, you know, in there straight away. So those calls to action are normally very strong. But the other person we learned stuff from, and again, I polarizing character, was his Tony Robbins' website. When you look at Tony Robbins' website, it's all about, you know, there's a lot of calls to action. It's, you know, it's go and have a look at our events, start here, transforming your life. It's saying if you're ready to start, or you're ready to talk to someone, or you're ready to do something right now, we want you to come on in.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that all the things that you've just said there are things that, you know, when I built the website 3 years ago, and I, you know, I sit there and go, well, I'm in marketing, I should know these things. But it's funny how you don't even consider them back then yourself. It's plumbers and their pipes and all those kind of things.
100%. So, you know. Do you know one of the most looked at pages on a website is the About Us page?
Absolutely, yeah.
The About Us page very rarely has any call to action on it.
Yeah.
So you rely on them to read about you and then go, oh, I'd like to now do the next step. Shit, what button do I press now to do the next step, as opposed to click here to book a time to have a chat with Simon, or click here to download my ebook that I wrote specifically for accountants.
And I had a conversation the other week with someone else who said about us pages, about how poorly presented and poorly written they are. And you must see this, you know, all the time, or even company websites that just don't have any visibility of who's behind the company, of who the people are, who
and
started
no personality. It's like, are you serious? You want me to do business with you guys? You're like one dimensional.
Yeah. I had a video, an agency that I coach, and they'd come to me and said, they do a lot of video, and they said to me, we've got this idea about creating small packages that would allow us to go into companies and say, look, we can transform your About Us page from a static picture and some crappy text to a, you know, 30 second to 90 second video about the people behind the company. And I'm going, what a fucking great idea.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you can go onto an About Us page and you can find out all about the people behind the company in 60 seconds, it's a great idea.
I love that.
You know, and I think, again, from, you know, when you talk about the fitness industry, to you kind of want to see who's going to be training you, who's going to be teaching you, and a black and white photo and two paragraphs of text doesn't really do it, does it?
And generally, Simon, that text is exactly the same as every other personal trainer or gym. It's the same. And probably, respectfully, it's the same as every other accountant. Every accountant has the black and white photo with, I've got these qualifications, I went to this university.
Yeah.
But if I want to stay out of jail and get a tax refund at the same time, I want to know. And video is just such a great way to know and then determine if I like and even trust that person, because I can see them, I can hear them. I'm like, oh, I actually like the way they talk, and I like the way they dress, and I like the way his passion is around accounting, or his passion is around selling houses.
Yeah.
It kind of makes sense. I don't understand why there's not more video that people can use.
Yeah, yeah. We better wind this up, because otherwise you and I are going to talk all day. My last three questions for you. You've obviously met some businesses and some brands in your past, fitness brands, whatever. What's a brand out there that you admire, that you like what they're doing, that you kind of look at? And aside from the Gary Vaynerchuk's brands, some of those, you know, brands or people that you kind of look up to and aspire to be and say, you know what, that's where my, you know, that's where my focus is, trying to be as good as that brand or as good as that person.
Probably the brand that in the fitness industry that I think does it better than anybody else is Soul Cycle, which is a cycle studio based in the US.
I've heard about them.
Forget about the product and the exercise modality. It's the way they build community. It's the way they communicate with people. It's, you know, for me, if you can have a feature movie that's made and focuses solely around your brand, you must be doing something right. I love what they do. I love how quirky they are with their brand. I love how they just make it pop. So, as I said, I don't think it matters what industry you're in. To look at SoulCycle, I just think is pretty darn cool.
And I think one of the things that I'd I can't remember whether I heard one of the founders interviewed or I'd read something or something, but I do know about SoulCycle. But I'd read that they empower those people who are taking the classes to really tailor them for the group of people that are going to be in the class and tailor them to their own personalities and things like that, so that it's not just a spin class, it's a spin class by, or it's so-and-so's spin class, it's JT's spin class. And you know if you're going to do that one, you're going to get blasted with 45 minutes of heavy metal or whatever.
Yes,
they're very, very personalized. But as you've alluded to several times in this podcast, that builds a sense of community, and that creates that retains customers.
So I love that. I love the culture of the All Blacks rugby team.
Yep.
And James Kerr talks about it in his book Legacy. I just admire what they've developed, but that then flows through into their supporter base and how loyal their supporter base is. Win or lose, they still stick with them. Win or lose, you buy, you know, it's still the most sold rugby jersey on the planet is the All Black jersey.
Right, right.
Because it's cool and you want to be part of that tribe, which is really hard when you're a really sad Wallaby fan that you just can't buy that jersey because you wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
But everybody else in the world does, and they do such a great job as a brand in their community and the way that the culture of that organization.
There's a book that I recommend, don't know whether you've read it, but I've recommended it a couple of times on this podcast, called The Culture Code.
Yes, I have.
The Secrets great of book. Highly Successful Groups by Daniel Coyle. Yep. And they mention the All Blacks in that. That's one of the groups of teams or team cultures that they mention, the All Blacks, because we don't have enough time to go into all the benefits of it, but I think the All Blacks is a fantastic example of how to build culture within your business.
And then my third one, which is a bit left field, and it's interesting to watch from afar.
Yep.
And that's the royal family.
Okay, I'm interested to find out why on this one.
Well, you just kind of see them reinventing themselves to be relevant to the new generation. And you watch, I mean, my mum is a royalist. I'm not saying I'm a royalist or a Republican or anything like that, but my mum is a royalist. She loves Lizzie. She just admires what she's done and the way she holds herself and the way she does things. And I think there's this group of people around the world that are kind of, I say, north of 60, north of 65, who just admire Elizabeth. And then we had the charisma bypass of Charles. But then you've got, William and Harry that are really stepping up and making themselves accessible and acknowledging the parts and different communities around the world. I just think whoever's helped them redefine themselves, reimagine themselves, whatever the word is, it's fascinating to watch from a marketing perspective. Yep. Because in all honesty, the US didn't really accept the royal family. And then William comes along and Harry comes along, and now they're an international brand.
Yeah.
So I like watching that from afar, because I think that they're reading the community and they're I don't know if it's manipulating, but it seems very natural to me what they're doing. I find it fascinating.
Interesting choice. Interesting choice. Penultimate question. What have you got planned for the rest of 2019? We're a quarter of the way into the year. What have you got that's sort of big things lined up for you this year?
I've got a couple. First one is I'm going to Lebanon. I'm a bit nervous about that, but I'm speaking at a conference in Lebanon. So it's an out there place, but yeah, I'm going there. We are running the first ever fitness industry technology summit.
Okay.
So I'm running that in July in Sydney, and as an industry, we have always focused on sales and marketing, but and when we talk technology, the industry tends to think that just means Facebook ads or Google ads.
Yeah.
They don't understand the breadth, the width, the depth of what technology is. So I'm hoping that we will motivate and stimulate gym owners around Australia to come along to this event. So
what's the website for that?
Fitness Industry Tech Summit.
That makes sense.
Someone said to me, why don't you come up with a groovy name? I said, well, isn't Fitness Industry Tech Summit groovy? Like, it says what it is.
Is that a .com.au or a
.com.au.
Okay.
So, as an industry, we are data rich and knowledge poor about our customer, which I think is a case for a lot of businesses. But I also think as an industry, as well as lots of industries, is the consumer probably is more tech savvy than a lot of the owners.
Mm.
So for us to catch up, we need an event where we can just focus on tech. So we're doing that in the middle of the year. And then I've got a couple more trips booked to the States to speak at conferences over there and do some work with a couple of chains over there.
Okay. Interesting. All right. And the last question then, if someone's interested in getting hold of you, they want to ask you some questions or they're interested in sort of you coming into their business and helping them out, what's the best way of reaching out to you?
Well, the easiest way is if you Google Justin Tamsett, there'll probably be all those really cool videos that I filmed when I was like at university that
there
I don't
are,
want,
yes.
I don't want them to see.
Too late.
But if you go to LinkedIn, you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Love to connect there, or you can go to activemgmt.com.au and shoot me an email from there. Hit me up on Facebook. I do a Facebook live show every Friday at 8 o'clock called JT in the Raw. So you're most welcome to join that as well.
That's not you nude, is it?
You know what? Originally, I thought I might do that, and then my wife said Facebook might shut you down. So I'm generally clothed from the waist up. But
right, okay. they are cracking down on horror content on Facebook.
I know, so. That's right. Well, I'm waiting just to look at my face and go, you know what? You shouldn't be on. And it's interesting. I guess I'll finish with this: is how powerful video is, and the reach that you can get with Facebook Live these days is phenomenal if you consistently do it.
Yeah.
A one-off will not help you, and people go along and they say, oh, I need to do Facebook Live. They do one and they go, well, where are my 10 new clients? It's like, no. This is part of the process of liking, knowing, trusting process.
It's a fantastic point. I would probably say that is applicable to all marketing, not just Facebook Live. I think
I agree.
You know, if you just do, there's so many people you go, right, well, we have this issue. We go, we've been working with you for a month now. Why are we not millionaires? And you sort of go, well, this is going to take a little bit longer than that. But, there's some people you get good results with. And I think the other thing I would add to that, and I'd again be interested to hear your viewpoint on this, is that marketing isn't just one channel. You have to be operating in and doing lots of different things, even if some of them may not appear to be giving you a direct return on investment straight away.
Mm-hmm.
But they marketing to me is a cake, and you need a lot of different ingredients for it.
That is a great analogy. It is marketing is a cake, and every little bit of advertising you do is one of those ingredients to make the full cake.
Yeah. And I often use the analogy then that social media tends to be the icing on it rather than, you wouldn't serve a cake that was just icing. That social media is a really important part. It's going to finish off what you're doing, but there's a lot of other stuff that you need to have right within the recipe for the cake for it to actually, achieve what you want it to achieve, which is, and I'm going off way down the metaphor route here, but actually make it taste good. But
totally agree. I mean, how many businesses would be screwed, Simon, if Facebook changed the way that, and they let's imagine, and I don't think they would, but let's imagine that tomorrow they go, there's no more Facebook advertising.
Absolutely.
How many small businesses, gyms, accountants would now go, oh shit, how do I get leads now?
You know what's funny? I've spoken to a lot of people who built software companies and attained some fairly big success in that 2010-2014 space, where Facebook, Twitter, you know, all those platforms were a bit of a wild west. You could pretty much produce some half decent content, and all of a sudden you got 10,000 fans.
Yeah.
You know, without really, I mean, yes, they were making an effort, but compared to what they need to, I often think about some of those businesses that were actually born out of success of those early days of Facebook, whether they would even stand a chance today.
I totally agree.
It's weird to think about. And some of the tools that we're used to using today, some of them just got their success out of that fact that Facebook was easy to access platform.
And now it's hard, and it's hard, consistent work that people aren't prepared to do. Just as the consumer wants instant gratification, I think there's a lot of business owners and marketers that want instant gratification.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, mate, we could end up talking for hours here, and maybe we'll organise to do this again sometime, because it was a great chat. So look, thank you very, very much for coming on the show. And obviously, if anybody wants to reach out to JT, I highly recommend it. But once again, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Simon. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much for tuning in to the Paper Planes podcast. We love the fact that you have spent your time listening to us, and we really appreciate it. Once again, if you want to find out anything more about us, www.flypaperplanes.co, or come and find us on Instagram or Facebook. Other than that, we will see you next week.